Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another fabulous episode of Inside Acting. This is your host, William Powell, the king of DC media, internationally known, nationally respected, and locally appreciated. And tonight I'm broadcasting from Studio Bow in beautiful Baltimore, Maryland, where there's a party going on. Every hot actor in the DMV area is here tonight. It's fantastic. Tonight our guest is comedian and storyteller Adam Rubin. And I think he has joined us. Let's see if he's joined us. Hey, Adam, what's up, man?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, fantastic, fantastic. I was just talking about you.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, what a coincidence. Yeah, so let's get started. I want to first talk out about your very funny book, Surviving Your Stupid Decision to Go to Grad School. And I want to read an excerpt from it that I thought was very, very funny. Let me see if I can find it here. You have something here on page 40 about a coffee mug. And you describe a coffee mug thusly. A coffee mug is the conduit by which you convey caffeine into your blood, largely because society frowns upon drinking directly from coffee pots or injecting espresso into one's cephalic vein. When selecting a mug, choose one that can withstand abuse. Ceramic mugs may look nice, but only a shatterproof plastic or acrylic mug will still hold coffee by the time you graduate. To test your mug, slam it on the ground repeatedly and yell, "I can't take it anymore." I thought that was pretty funny, man. So tell me more about the book, how that came about.
Sure. Well, I spent 7 years in grad school. And by the time I was near the end of it, I felt that I needed to write something making fun of it. It was just a long, long drawn out experience.
Okay. So,
I mean, it was, if you go into any bookstore, you see all these college survival guides, but there really was none for grad school. So I thought maybe I should write something like that. So this book is sort of a satirical. Well, completely satirical. There's no actual advice in the book. You know, a way to tell how to pick the best advisor, how to avoid that advisor, how to fall asleep without anyone detecting in boring seminars, how to steal free food, all the tips and tricks that grad students need to know.
So talk a little bit more about how you got into comedy.
Well, when I was in college, there was a flyer that I saw once for a stand-up comedy contest, and it just sounded like something that was very interesting and it might be fun to try. And I tried it, and it turned out to be a lot of fun. And so I did the same contest again the next year and the next year and the next. And then after that, I found myself out of college and having been spoiled by only performing in front of these large, happy college audiences that were, you know, mostly full of my friends. And so then I got to try comedy out in the real world in these, you know, these comedy open mic nights in Baltimore on like a, you know, a Thursday at 10 p.m. and you got 5 audience members and 20 comedians, just these long, long slogs of shows. And I got to learn a little bit more about how comedy is in the real world. It's not wonderful. It's a big letdown because it's, you know, the audience is mostly comprised of your friends is the easy audience. That's the fun one to perform for, and then you get out and you see that all of a sudden, nope, you have small shows. Sometimes the shows are great. Sometimes they're really not.
Okay. Fantastic. So have you done any acting in the past?
I've done some. I mean, the acting that I've done has been in a really sort of non-conventional sense. I haven't really been in plays or musicals or anything like that outside of high school and college. But now I act in these weird little things where someone will hire me to go to. I was just Sunday night. I went to a wedding in downtown D.C. and I dressed as an Orthodox rabbi and walked around making fun of people's relatives. And I was hired to do this. This is not just something I did for fun. But it's this, if you go to bottledancers.com, there are actually troops of fake rabbis across the country. And every few weeks, the head office of rabbis in Los Angeles gives us a call and says, you know, are you available to go to this bar mitzvah or this wedding? And we go, and they send a script that they've already negotiated with the client, and you go around and make fun of people's relatives. It's so strange to see that if you try to do acting in the real world, there's all the normal stuff of, you know, community theater and larger theaters throughout the city. But then you also have things like this, and I've been killed in different corporate murder mysteries. I've dressed as a paparazzo and stood outside of people's weddings pretending to take pictures of them. I once had to wear a tuxedo and stand outside of a Kenny Loggins concert for 3 hours opening doors. I mean, weird things, but these are all found through different character acting agencies.
Oh, wow. Okay. Like Carbone Entertainment or some of those, something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Carbone Entertainment with Karen Carbone and Alana Shore Entertainment. Actually, I haven't done anything with them in a little while, but I used to do a bunch of things with them. I was, you know, I like just the randomness of this whole enterprise, that one day I would just get a phone call saying, can you go tomorrow to a little town in Virginia where they have the largest civilian collection of military tanks because we need extras for a Korean soap opera? And
wow.
Like, yes, yes, I'll do that. That sounds like fun.
Wow. Yeah, I know I got a call once to play a Black Santa, but it fell through at the last second.
In a Korean soap opera?
Huh?
In a Korean soap opera?
No. I told you, folks, this is a funny guy. Wow. Yeah, so I've done, like you have, extra work, and I just got
mm-hmm.
cast in a Fringe Festival play, as
mm-hmm.
a matter of fact. In fact, you've been in a Fringe Festival play. Talk about that.
Yeah, sure. So last year I did the Fringe Festival for the first time and had a great time. I really liked it. I did a one-man show called Please Don't Beat Me Up, Stories and Artifacts from Adolescence. And
uh-huh.
it's basically it's a show made up of true stories of horribly embarrassing things that happened to me, like wetting the bed at summer camp, and interspersed with things like readings from my actual fifth-grade diary and I have a seventh grade audio cassette diary I play parts of, and really the main theme of the show is anti-bullying, because I grew up as a very unpopular kid, so I've gotten the opportunity to do this show actually recently at a lot of DC public schools, trying to sort of show kids that you're not alone if you feel lonely growing up. And I'll be doing the show again on the 24th of June as part of the Benevolent Media Festival at the DC Arts Center. So that's going to
okay.
be a lot of fun, because they're going to have a panel discussion afterwards about bullying. And that was
okay.
that was last year's show. And then this year I've got a new show that I'm working on at the moment. I'm hoping it'll be ready by the time we perform it, which is in a month from now. And the show is called Dr. Science's Science Time Science Vaganza. It's a satire of kids' science presentations.
Okay, fantastic. So, I mean, what's the plot? What's the concept?
The idea is I am Dr. Science, and we have a baking soda volcano, and we've got potato clocks and all the sort of standard cliche things that science presenters do for kids. And then at some point in one experiment, something goes horribly, horribly wrong. And I shouldn't give away too much more of the plot, but my friend Chuck Nah, who's another performer and storyteller, he plays a significant role in what happens next.
Oh, okay. Fantastic. Wow. So, tell me more about your comedy class.
That has been something that has been a lot of fun to do. So I teach a comedy class. I've been teaching it now for 8 years. I guess I started, 8 years I've taught this class.
Wow.
At Johns Hopkins. That's where I was in grad school. And while I was there, I tried to do a lot of teaching. Just because I found that fun. And also they give you a little bit of extra money, and grad students have no money, so it was nice. And I taught a lot of things like expository writing and science writing. But then at one point I proposed a class on stand-up comedy and ended up teaching it just as a January 3-week intersession class, the classes that
right.
students take pass-fail, which is good because I don't want to have to grade anybody on comedy.
And
Every year, every January, I get 15 to 20 students who've never done stand-up before in most cases, and 18 days after we begin, they are on stage in front of last year's show. We actually had 1,000 people show up.
Wow.
It's just perfectly timed, and I didn't know this the first year I did this, but it's on the night when nobody has anything else to do. And so everybody comes to the show, and there were 1,000 people last year. It blows my mind. And so they go from having never done this to doing a 4-minute stand-up routine in front of 1,000 people 18 days
wow.
later. And it's just amazing to watch that transformation as they become more and more comfortable with it.
Wow. So what's some of the concepts that you teach in your class?
Well, we talk a lot about authenticity, about the fact that when you're, the difference between stand-up and something like acting in a play is that in a play there's no authenticity and the audience accepts that and is fine with it. But in stand-up, you're telling stories about yourself. And they don't have to be true stories, but the audience still perceives them as true stories just because you, by virtue of standing there, are a testament to your own authenticity. And everything that you talk about is centered on you, even if you're talking about, fruits and vegetables. You're saying, I like this, don't you hate it when, I don't like when. So you're talking about your own likes, dislikes, your fears, things that you find hypocritical. We talk a lot about that and the role that the comedians play in society as the people who are best at finding and expressing the truth.
Hello?
Yep. Hello? Hello?
Hello, yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, I think you kind of blanked out there for a minute.
Oh, sorry. Uh-oh.
Okay. So give me some advice, some of your advice. What advice would you have for comedic actors?
The first thing I would tell comedic actors is that if you... I think there's a lot of benefit from cross-training, from trying out all kinds of things. I did improv for 3 years. I'm not really great at improv, but
uh-huh.
That's why I don't do it anymore because I thought it was okay at it, but I wasn't great. But just having done it, I learned so much. Even though it's not what I do primarily, it really got me thinking about performance in a lot of different ways. And same thing with playwriting. I used to do a lot of playwriting, and now I still write things that I perform myself, but I used to just write plays for others to perform, and I learned so much about the stage just from doing that. So another thing I tell my comedy students that I would tell any actor is that the best teacher in the world is stage time.
Oh.
You learn so much just from getting out there and trying it. The very first time I always tell the story, the very first time I ever tried comedy off campus, I went to this horrible place called the Race Car Cafe and Comedy Club in Malaga, New Jersey. I didn't know anything about it. I called them. I said, do you have open mic nights? And they said, yes, every Thursday we have a band playing. And then when the band's on break, it's open mic for 10 minutes. And I didn't realize it, but they call it the Race Car Cafe and Comedy Club because one night a month they have a comedy show, but this was not that night. So this was just a regular Thursday night in a bar. There were like 8 people. It's a bar where people watch stock car racing. 8 people in this bar. The blues jazz band goes on break. And when they said it's open mic, they mean that people will like bring a guitar or something. So instead, I got up and did 10 minutes of stand-up in front of 8 people who weren't listening and weren't supposed to listen because they weren't there to listen to a show. They were there to talk to their friends. And nobody listened, nobody applauded, it was completely dead, and it was the worst 10 minutes ever. But when I got off stage, I learned so much. I thought, well, I know it will never, ever get worse than that. And
right,
if I could
yeah.
do that...
Can't go lower.
What's that?
So you can't go any lower.
Yeah, no. I've sunk as low as I can sink, and I didn't die. So it should be, after this, what is there left to be afraid of?
Yeah, what could be worse?
Yeah.
Well. So talk about balancing your day job with comedy.
My day job?
Okay, folks, I think we lost our guest there. Hold on, let me see if I can just recall him, redial. See, just give me a second here. And I'll just redial if he does it first. Just give me 1 second. Dowling. And let's see if I can get him back on the air. Okay, I think he's back on. Oh. Hello?
Why is someone ringing?
Hey.
Hi.
Hello, Adam.
Hello, yes.
Yeah, okay, I got you.
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
Sorry. So... I don't know why the phone is still ringing, though.
Yeah, let me, I dialed you. You dropped
telephone
it, I dialed
number
back.
202.
Oh, I dialed you.
248.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay, you still
okay.
hear me? Okay,
yeah,
good.
Still hear you. Sorry
so
about that.
So you're talking about balancing your day job with comedy.
Yeah, sorry about that. I asked you beforehand, should I use a cell phone or a landline? And you said landline's better, and I went with the landline, and I thought I'd be safe. And now the stupid cord popped out of my landline.
The cord popped out of your lounge. It was that kind of night, man, because it took me about a half hour to even get my netbook fired up.
Oh.
And then I tried to use Netscape, and that messed up. Then I went to Explore, and unfortunately that worked. So I think I'll be in a market for a new netbook.
Yeah.
But I digress.
I don't even know why I have a landline. It's useful about once a month. For something
yeah.
like this, and then the one time it didn't. Anyway, so my day job is very, very different from comedy. I'm a molecular biologist. That's what I went to grad school for.
Okay.
So in my day job, I work in a lab at a small biotech company, and we're working on making a vaccine for malaria. So I
right.
really don't have any comedy in my day job. It has nothing to do with comedy, and in fact, I try to keep the two separate, because if you do too much comedic stuff while you're while you're at a serious place, people will think of you as a non-serious person sometimes.
Nothing funny about germs.
Nothing funny about germs, no. I mean, there are funny things that happen just the same way there are funny things that happen at any workplace, but... I don't want to be that person who everyone perceives is always trying to look for new stuff for his routine. That
right.
person tends to be pretty annoying.
Huh. Yeah, so you're not much of a jokester at the job, huh?
Not really. And a lot of times people are surprised to find out that I do stand-up and things like that at night. It's just... I still joke with people at work, but everybody jokes with people at work. It's just part of human interaction.
Right. Absolutely. So now talk about you had an appearance on the Food Network.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was in a couple of years ago. There was a show called Food Detectives, and it was hosted by Ted Allen, who hosts Chopped, which started about the same time as the second season of Food Detectives, and Chopped is still on the air, and Food Detectives is not, unfortunately. And we did two seasons of it, and it was basically, it was like Mythbusters, but about food science. And so we'd look at things like the 5-second rule, or can you eat 6 saltines in 1 minute without taking a drink? stuff like that. That was the Cinnamon Challenge of 2009, really.
Right.
Or is the last 10% of your water bottle mostly backwash? That was one of the myths that we looked at, that last sip of your of your bottle of water is mostly backwash. So we would look at things like that, and I got to wear a lab coat and actually do some real science and present the results of it on TV, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, okay, good. That's fantastic. And you've also done some work for NPR?
Yeah, just a little bit. I did had a piece on All Things Considered at one point about grad school, and then I had a second piece, and I haven't done anything with them since. It was just on their website, and it was about vaccines, and vaccines are kind of a touchy subject, it would appear. I thought there would be some controversy, but I didn't know people would be calling each other murderers in the comments section of I put out there what I thought was not that controversial an opinion, which was that I'm working on a vaccine, so I have a great appreciation for and love of vaccines and all that they've done to improve world health. In 1950, 50 million people had smallpox.
Right.
1980, it was zero. That's tremendous.
Polio and all that.
Polio is eliminated from many parts of the world, and all these diseases that we just don't have to worry about anymore. So the point that I made in my opinion piece was just that people should be aware that choosing not to vaccinate is as much of a choice as choosing to vaccinate. And sometimes I think people are afraid to vaccinate because they don't want their child to be harmed by something that they have chosen to do. So,
right.
Which makes sense. I have a 1-year-old, and it feels a lot worse. I think a few months ago I accidentally stepped on her foot, and I felt a lot worse than when she, bumps her head on her own because I caused that. And so my only point in this piece was, be aware that choosing not to vaccinate is as much of a choice as choosing to vaccinate. And people just went nuts. On both sides. Because some people are already, they already think that vaccines are horrible things that make kids sick and cause autism, even though that's been conclusively proven that they haven't. And then on the other side, you've got people who say that those people are crazy. And it became a whole giant entangled mess. And so NPR did not ask me to come in and read that one on the air. That one just stayed on the web.
Oh, wow. A lot of controversy.
Yeah.
Wow.
No comedy in that one.
Oh, man. Wow. So let's talk a little bit about what you've got coming up. You want to talk about some of your shows?
Sure. Yeah. So my one-man show from last year in Fringe, Please Don't Beat Me Up, that's going to be at 7:30 p.m. on the 24th of June at the D.C. Arts Center as part of the Benevolent Media Festival. And then actually I'm performing it again in July, on July 6th in two different places in Maine, one on the 6th and one on the 7th. And that'll be very interesting. All my shows are on adamrubin.net. And that's AdamRubeN, not to be confused with RubiN or Reuben. And then the big thing I'm trying to promote is the new Fringe show. And the reason I'm trying to promote it so much is that with these shows, they make you pay a lot of money, and then you just hope people will come see it so you break even. So your hope is that people will come and see this show. It's July 14th, 19th, 21st, 27th, 28th, 29th, all at different times. At it's actually at B103, which is a little theater that Fringe is building inside the Mount Vernon United Methodist Church at
1st
Avenue. So you can go to capitalfringe.org, and tickets are going to go on sale starting June 18th.
Okay. Well, yeah, you know more details about the Fringe Festival than I do. I know the dates because I just got cast in the play about Duke Ellington, and I play a professor in it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well,
so, pretty excited about that. So I don't know, we might bump into each other. Who knows?
Yeah, definitely. I'll see you in the what is it called? The Fort Baldacchino Gypsy Tent Bar that they have next to Fort Fringe.
Maybe so. Wow, fantastic. Okay, so let's see, what else that I have for you tonight. So what's your aspirations? Any aspirations to do a comedy film or anything like that, or what?
Yeah, I mean, I'm generally open to anything that I hear. I've been doing a little bit less stuff lately, mainly because I have a one-year-old daughter, and I don't have as much free time as I used to. But I'm always interested in all genres, film, television, live storytelling. I'm going to be on a new show on the Discovery Channel, or maybe the Science Channel, which I think is part of the Discovery Channel, but I'm not sure the relationship. So there's going to be a new show coming up either this fall or this winter called You Have Been Warned, where scientists look at YouTube and find the 20 most interesting YouTube clips on a given subject and talk about the science in them. So that'll be fun. Yeah, in terms of aspirations, I would love to keep doing television. That was a lot of fun doing Food Detectives, and I really missed it. So it was good to get to go out and film this new show.
Wow. So now You Have Been Warned. It has kind of an ominous kind of sounding title there.
You Have Been Warned. Yeah, you know, I'm actually not in love with the title because it's so vague. But it's a really interesting concept for a show. But apparently they had very long debates over what the title would be. I think someone wanted to call it The Experimentalists. And then someone else thought that was too close to The Mentalist. I don't know. It's hard to describe what goes on in a TV show just in the title, especially when it, you know, people looking at clips of YouTube science.
Huh. So how'd you get that gig?
Someone saw my website. I guess they searched for science comedy, and they emailed me and asked me to send in a clip of me talking about some YouTube science. And
then
I moved forward, so I was very happy about that.
Wow. Yeah, we might see you. Actually, you might have your own show, like a la the Mythbusters. I'll tell you an interesting story. Actually, I got the chance to play George Washington Carver at the USA Science and Engineering Festival. That was about a couple months ago down in D.C.
Oh, cool, yeah, at the Convention Center.
Yeah, down at the Convention Center, yeah. And I was out there juggling peanuts and talking to the kids. And it was really interesting when I ran into a parent who was either a teacher or a scientist, and I could actually talk to them about how peanuts would take nitrogen from the air and create ammonia and create natural fertilizer and enrich the soil and the whole thing. It was kind of interesting to talk to the parents. And then if I had little toddlers who weren't very interested, what I'd do, I'd have some peanut candy, you know, that candy that's shaped like a peanut.
Yeah, the circus peanuts.
Circus peanuts, yeah. So I give out circus peanuts. And let me tell you, no kid turned that down.
Yeah, I went to the Science and Engineering Festival back when it was on the National Mall, the first one. That was really cool. I didn't get to go this year, but what a great event that is.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I know Bill Nye, the science guy, was there. And I know, I mean, it was just a crowd. You couldn't even hardly understand what he was saying. It was just so many people. And the acoustics in that building is just crazy. It's like
yeah,
the Grand
Canyon.
Yeah, you can't hear anything. You can't understand anything he's saying unless you were standing right next to him.
That's why it was so great when it was outside. I hope they do it again, and I hope they have it back on the mall again. Or not the mall. It wasn't near the mall. It was just north of the mall.
Right.
Yeah, I hope they have it back outside again in the future.
Oh, yeah, that would be fantastic. That would be great. Be awesome. All right, sir. Well, I think we're coming to the end of the interview with you. As I told you, I'm at, and I told the listeners out there, I'm here live from Studio Bo. I don't know if you can hear the folks celebrating in the background there. I'm here
at
Studio
Bo.
What's that?
What are they celebrating?
Oh, actually, they're celebrating not only being actors, but they're also doing a lot of networking out there. So a lot of actors. A lot of the hot actors in the DMV area, Baltimore, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia area, are here at Studio Bo, where there are a lot of acting classes being taught, and it's owned by a guy named Ken Arnold, who has been one of my guests on the show back in the past. And Ken recently played Buzz Aldrin in Men in Black 3, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's a pretty good actor, pretty good teacher, also a photographer. And it's this building is called the Broom Factory. They used to actually build brooms here. It's a big brick building, 3500 Boston Avenue up here in Baltimore. And they have several loft-type offices. And Ken's got his little studio here. You can come up here if you're an actor. You can get your headshots on. Come up here. He's got a class called the Actors Club, just like the Fight Club. Instead of Fight Club, it's the Actors Club, like the movie Fight Club.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a Actors Club every week. Got that the class going up here. And it's a pretty good place to go. Matter of fact, he even allows you to, if you're an actor and you've written something and you want to test it out, it's a good place to come up here and test out your material. He'll film it for you, critique it. It's a really good place for actors. And there's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of good talent here. A lot of my friends are here tonight. And I just hope they're not making too much noise. Apparently they're not. I think I can hear you pretty good. I guess you can hear me pretty good as well.
Yeah,
so I'm back here in Ken's, back here in his office, and just wait for somebody else to call in here. I want you to stay on the line with me here. I got a couple of revelers are going to hopefully call in. I'm trying to line up some guests to call in the second half of the show. So we'll just wait a few minutes here for them to call and have you hang on the line if you don't mind.
No, no problem.
Okay. All right, so we're just going to wait here for a second. So while we're waiting for some guests for the second half, tell me how you got your book published.
It was a long, long road. I used to write for National Lampoon, the website, not the videos.
Uh-huh.
And at one point they emailed all their authors and asked if anybody wanted to pitch a book to them, and I pitched this book about grad school. And they replied that they didn't really fit their demographic of drunk frat guys, since drunk frat guys don't go to grad school.
Yeah.
But then later I found myself, you know, I had already made this book proposal, and the person who I worked with at Lampoon then ended up working elsewhere and going freelance, and she said if anybody whose book proposals were rejected is interested in sort of re-pitching them, she can help with that process.
Uh-huh.
And so I actually emailed some other author friends and asked, is it a good idea to pay somebody for an email list of literary agents? And most of them said no, and then I did it anyway. And I'm glad I did, because I then sent my proposal out to this email list, and two agents liked it. I chose one of the two. And
uh-huh.
then she sent it around to publishers, and one publisher liked it, but that's okay. You just need one. And that was that.
Wow, that's pretty impressive, man. That's pretty impressive.
We're lucky, very lucky.
That's start writing for National Lampoon.
That was, it's a good thing you're at a networking event. It's all networking. That was just a friend of mine in college that I had done some comedy writing with, went to work for National Lampoon after college, and they must
uh-huh.
have asked him, do you know anybody who wants to write columns for our website? And he called me up and said, hey, would you be interested? So it was always through connections.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's what's going on here tonight at Studio Bow, you know, connections. I mean, that's the big thing. You know, one of the things I do, aside from being an actor, I teach a workshop called Networking Tricks for Actors, and I go into depth on how to network and just how to get your name out there and how to, and it's not all about helping yourself. It's, a lot of times it's just about helping others as well, you know? I mean, it's not just about you handing out cards like candy. You know, it's really about relationships. Yeah, building relationships. That's really what it's about.
Yeah, and the more people that you know and that you've worked with and whose work you admire and respect, the more people you're likely to recommend for other things. Someone just asked
right.
me the other day, they're doing a storytelling show and we're short a few storytellers. Can I think of anyone for it? So I just started thinking of the people that I've worked with recently and knowing whose stories did well. And so it's by virtue of doing these shows that you may think are inconsequential, but during the shows you're meeting other people and they're seeing your work. And then maybe they're recommending you for something else another time.
Exactly, yeah. It's just about getting your name out there, and then they like what they see, you know, they'll recommend you. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of people ask me, what's the best way to get into voiceovers? And then I'll say, well, you know, the best thing to do is if you just do good work. The same thing goes for how do you find an agent. I mean,
yeah.
I think, in my opinion, the best thing to do is just go out there and do good work. If you do good work, I mean, they'll find you. That's basically what it comes down to.
Yeah, and so few people become instant sensations overnight. Even
right.
A lot of the famous actors in the world, they all started out doing small things, community theater, being in someone's student film, something like that. And
right.
it builds a resume, but it also gives you experience. And, you know, it takes a few years before these things really do snowball.
Right.
And then for
absolutely.
Me, one of the best things that I did recently was to get a website. If it weren't for that, you know, thanks to this website, I think I've gotten a few gigs through it.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
And for a long time, I just had a Facebook page and thought that was enough, and not really. The website, having a professional-looking website shows that you're serious.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's not enough to just have the free media. I mean, free media is great. I like the price for free media.
Mm-hmm.
Like you know, the Twitter, your social media, your Twitter and Facebook and things like that. But you got to have a little bit more than that. So I'm going to do an experiment right now. I'm going to walk out. I'm actually going to walk out where the excitement is, and let's see if you can still hear me. Let me see if I can find my assistant. Hold on.
All right.
Have them call me. Get their numbers. Hold on a second, Adam.
Okay.
Okay, just have them call me.
Have them call what?
No, I'm sorry. Have them write their number down and give it to me.
Okay.
All right, so can you still hear me?
Yep, I still hear you.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was just trying to line up some more guests there. Yep, so in any second now, I'll have some people, some numbers I can call. I appreciate mm-hmm. you hanging on with me here.
Yeah,
it's my first hour show.
Oh, congratulations.
And the first time I've done an hour. Yeah, I've done a half hour, and I've done 30 minutes. I'm sorry, I've done a half hour, I've done 40 minutes, but I've never done an hour. So tonight is, tonight's been an adventure, folks. Tonight's been an adventure. I tell people to take risks, and tonight has been an adventure. That's all I can say. But when the dust settles, we'll see how the show sounds. You never know how these things will sound when it's all over.
Yeah.
You never know. So talk about risks, man. What major risks have you taken in your career?
I think a lot of the, as a comedian, a lot of the shows that you do are risks. You show up at some place that you've never been before.
Right.
And you go on a stage and you have no idea whether the microphone's even going to work. Or if the audience is going to show up. I went to a show once where it was supposed to be me and three other guys. We were trying to put on a show in Boston, Virginia, and we had exactly zero audience members. Nobody came.
Oh, man.
I mean, my wife came, and my parents actually came down from Delaware, and that was it. We didn't do the show. And
right.
there's always a risk every single time. Even these character acting things, you go to some gig and maybe they'll have a large enough place for you to perform, or maybe they'll just have 2 square feet and you can't even move around. Maybe the sound system doesn't work. I've gotten to places for comedy shows where they've said, oh, we don't have a microphone. Do you mind? And it makes a big difference in a stand-up show whether or not you have one. I did a show just a couple months ago where I got there, and it turned out they're having a party in the same room as the comedy show, and they kind of thought that it would be okay for comedy to just be occurring over to the side. And
uh-huh.
So the whole show, and I was doing an hour, and the whole hour, you know, there were some people standing there listening, and then a lot of people in the back just talking loudly. And you couldn't make them stop talking loudly, not because they were being rude, but just because they were there for the party that was in the same room. So it's always a risk. Every time you go to a new place, you never know what they will set up and how well they'll set it up.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's see, I've got a guest number here. Let me see if I can connect. And just give me a second right here. See, oh, okay, we got Hillary Mazur. And let's see if I can dial in here. Give me 1 second. All right, so let's see. Give me a second here. Let's see if I can get her.
Hey, how are you?
Fantastic, you're on the air.
Oh, how exciting. That's just really fun.
Wow. So I understand that you just recently completed the show. Oh, first of all, say hi to Adam Rubin.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm going to try to find someplace that's a little bit more quiet because it's a little bit loud out here. So we can walk down the hallway a little bit.
Right. So tell me about the show you just completed.
Actually, I'm in the middle of a run right now at Spotlighters Theater in Baltimore on St. Paul Street at Reed. We're doing the Hot Out Baltimore or Hotel Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
And we have two weekends left. We are up tomorrow at 8, Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2. And then next weekend, we actually have a four-day weekend. We have Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8, and Sunday at 2. And actually, Thursday is the night to come because it's 10 spot Thursday. You only pay $10 for your ticket.
Oh, okay.
So, and that's a bargain because usually tickets are 20.
Right.
And it's some people might liken it to Seinfeld because it's a play sort of about nothing except that about relationships, about people.
Right.
It's written by Lanford Wilson. It was first produced in 1973, I believe, and it won a Pulitzer Prize. And it's about basically a flop house that's being demolished and all the characters that live there. And I play a character named Millie. And Millie is a 68-year-old retired waitress from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And she's for telling her stories. And she kind of, Millie is pretty much the metaphor for the hotel.
Right.
In the way I look at it. And she kind of, all the other actors, all the other actually characters are very frenetic. Millie slows pace down a little bit, like in the South. And she tells the stories like all good Southern women do.
So you got a little bit, have to use a little bit of accent, huh?
Well, yes, we use a New Orleans dialect, and I was taught how to do that by Fuzz Rourke, who is the executive director over at Spotlighters, very talented man. And I learned a lot, like a lot of the consonants in the New Orleans dialect are just kind of, you know, glossed over, like it's not Baton Rouge, it's Baton Rouge. And that's where Millie's from. She's from Baton Rouge, and she's from an enormous family of 14. It's a joyful role. It's the most talented cast I've ever worked with. It's a very, very strong cast.
Wow.
And, it's just a joyful, it's been a joyful experience. We bonded very early in the process. It's been directed by Eric Stein, and he just brought us together in as an ensemble. There's so much love backstage that we hurt when we're not together.
That's amazing. That's an amazing statement because that's not always true. That's not
that's
always
true.
I know I assistant directed a show about a year ago, and wow, let me tell you, sometimes there's personalities, you know?
Absolutely. But this, and I've worked in some ensemble pieces before, and I've worked with some cast where we bonded, but I've never worked in a situation like this. And in fact, Eric, who's really more of an actor than he acts more than he directs,
and it hurts him when we go into production because he can't be a part of it anymore.
Wow.
Because I'm hearing a ringing sound.
Yeah, I'm ringing on the
I, my phone is ringing. I'm hearing a ringing sound. Do I need to do anything?
No. That's another guy calling in.
I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah, hello.
Hello, Jason.
Yeah, hey, how we doing?
Hey, good. Yeah, this is William Powell. You're on the Inside Acting Radio Show. Say hello to Hillary Mazur and Adam Rubin.
Hey, Hillary and Adam.
Hi, how are you?
How are we doing? What's everybody doing tonight? What are we talking about?
Yeah, okay. So we're talking about you, man. I know we're live from Studio Bow, and it's all about networking. So,
hell yeah.
Tell me a little bit.
Am I allowed to say that?
Can
I say hell? I didn't know if I could say hell on a podcast. Can I say that?
What's that? I didn't quite hear you.
I didn't know if I was allowed to say hell on a podcast. I didn't know. Can I say that?
You're good. So what's on,
what's good.
On your mind, man? What's on your mind?
What is on my mind is that next week I will be in Virginia Beach shooting a movie with Tom Hanks, and that's what's on my mind, my friend.
Wow. Do you have lines?
Yes, I do. It should be 2 weeks' worth of principal work for me. I am also up for a role in Harrison Ford's new movie, Paranoia, which shoots next month.
Uh-huh.
And that's actually looking pretty good, too. So that's what's on my mind. And I also got to say that I've met a lot of people tonight at Ken's networking event. Lots of beautiful women, lots of good actors, and even ran into a lot of people who I went to college with, which is kind of bizarre. So.
Oh, wow, fantastic. So you got a lot of business cards and contacts, and you kept it moving with some networking?
Oh, yeah, I've got a pocket full of cards, though, I only kept the good ones, though. I'm kidding.
So you got to follow up now. You got to do something about it. That's what I tell my students.
Oh, most definitely, yeah. And that's actually one of the biggest things that people don't realize about this business is the follow-through, following up with casting directors, following up with those potential leads. And on top of that, there is actually a book that I've read called The Business of Acting.
Right.
And it's written by a woman named Dallas Travers. And a lot of the tips she has in there for marketing are actually spot on. And she even likes saying things like, don't be afraid to send out ships. And what she means by ships is it's like, make sure you send out like press releases, send out postcards, send out, you know, headshot submissions, send out emails. And it's just like in the old days, how she likes to put it, when a commercial fleet would send out many ships because they weren't sure which ones would actually make it to the next port due to the storm. And, you know, the mail system, email, I mean, with all these casting directors and these directors, producers, all these people are getting just hammered with information left and right. So you're not sure if that information is going through using the basic communication model. So
right.
It is actually a great idea, as she said, just to keep hammering it away. But you don't just send them anything. You got to send them the best marketing material that you can afford. But yeah, it's all about follow through. You got to show them that you're serious about it. Because if they don't think you're serious about it, then you know they might use you once, and then you know, okay, well you're done. But if they
right.
find that you're serious about it, they're going to call you back. So
that's right.
Always something to keep in mind.
I'm gonna bring on another guest, Alexis Baroni. So let's.
Oh, she's beautiful.
We can call her. And while we're waiting for that, Hillary, you want to chime in on that, on networking? Did you make a lot of contacts tonight?
Yeah, I did. And I met up with some people that I've met some new people. I met some people I've known in the past. I've met people who said, yeah, I'll email you this, I'll email you that, I'll email you the other. I'm an older actor, and, you know, I'm starting late in my life to try to pursue the passion that I've had for my whole life. And what's nice is that
everybody wants to see you succeed.
That's right.
And everybody, it's just an incredible support system. And I think Ken, you know, with what he does with these networking events and what he does with his actors club workshop is just, you know, you can't put a price tag on it. And I've met a lot of people, renewed some relationships. You know, Robert Neil Marshall, who's just an incredible monologue coach, he's taught me so much in what I've learned. He taught me visualization with monologues, and I did a monologue for a casting director at Arena Stage, and he said,
hello?
I saw everything that you said.
Oh, hold on.
And that's
on.
So validating.
Alexis?
Yes, hello.
Hey, this is William Powell. You're on the Inside Acting Radio Show. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Okay, all right. So quickly tell us what you've been up to and how have you enjoyed the party tonight?
Oh, I have enjoyed the party very much tonight, and I've been up to a lot lately.
Okay. Oh, yeah, say hello to, we got Adam Rubin on the line, Hillary Mazur, and J.P. Bear.
Barry, Barry.
Oh, what's that again, sir?
Barry, J.P. Barry.
Barry, I'm sorry. I got bad handwriting there. Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's mine, probably.
So, Alexis, tell me what's up.
A lot, actually, for me. I'm doing 7 film projects over the summer.
Okay, tell me more about it.
I do believe you know Nadia Williams, right? And she's doing Vampires Rise of the Fallen with me. Well, I with her. I get to play a mean cheerleader in that. And that is a feature length, which will be coming out this winter.
Wow. Talk about the audition for that.
It was insane. There were so many people who came out for the limited amount of parts. But everyone who auditioned, I thought, did very well, like what I saw. And it was great because everyone was super nice and everyone already had a family feel about it. So it was great.
Okay. Fantastic. That's fantastic. So talk about some of the networking you did tonight. You get a lot of contacts or what?
Yes, actually, you met my friend JP, and I met him tonight. It was great meeting a whole bunch of people I didn't know. I met some great people who are producers and who are actors, and it's a great way to connect with everyone in a different sense, in a more relaxed sense. So the party tonight was very fun.
Wow. Fantastic. That's really fantastic. That's what it's about. That's what it's about.
Definitely.
I heard we had some good music tonight, too.
Yeah, I thought the singer was phenomenal.
Very good cover singer, definitely. Unfortunately, he had to leave, but it is getting toward that hour. Just I want to touch more and more thing about this when I was talking earlier about, you know, when you were talking about follow-up. Something that I found very interesting is some people look down on this profession because they don't see any discipline behind it. And actually, it takes a heck of a lot more discipline than having a job where you have a boss who's telling you what to do all the time. You are your boss. You are the executor of your own destiny and future in it. So you have to be the one telling yourself, I need to make these submissions. I need to get up today and look through all of the casting calls. I need to contact producers, you know, whatever, in order to work for that next job.
Because
if you don't, you're not working.
We're running up on about a minute left. I want to give everybody a chance, about 10 seconds each, to put your websites out there, and after that, we're going to have to sign off. So, Adam, why don't you start?
Sure. AdamRubin.net. AdamRubin.net.
Okay. Hillary?
My website is under construction, so I'm not going to put it out there quite yet. I still have to add my videos and things like that, but it's with Agency Pro through Erica Argold. But the thing I wanted to say to all actors, do something every day to move your career forward, whether it's rehearsing a monologue or contacting potential employers. Just you have to do it every day.
Okay, Alexis?
My website is actually through a Blogspot. So my website is www.alexisbaroni.blogspot.com. And you spell Alexis, A-L-E-X-I-S, and Baroni, B-A-R-O-N-E.
Okay, JP?
It's johnpatrickberry.web.com. And, yeah, that's easy. Oh, it's Barry, B-A-R-R-Y. That's my full name, John Patrick Barry.
Okay. Hey, I want to thank you all so much for calling and bearing with me. I know we had a lot of technical difficulties tonight, but we made it do what it do, and I just want to thank you all so much for calling into the show. We had a fantastic show, and all my listeners out there, I want to tell you to do something for your career every day and break a leg. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you. Good night.
Having a
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.